It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Hundreds of thousands of Catalans took to the streets of Barcelona on Sunday, voicing their opposition to the region's declaration of independence. Amid vast political uncertainty for the region in northeastern Spain, Stuart King is a Catalan scholar at Monash University.
Not the Catalan police force, but the local Barcelona police force estimate there was about 300,000 people in the demonstration. And to give put it in context, at the beginning of the Second Gulf War, for example, there were over 1 million people protesting in the streets of Barcelona. So in terms of Spain, it is a substantial number of people, but it's not a very large number of people.
Catalonia's political leadership was fired on Saturday by central authorities in Madrid, who are trying to tame the worst political crisis Spain has seen in decades. Madrid has called for a December 21st election in Catalonia to choose new leadership. Some believe it's too soon for an election, and pro-independence parties will increase their majority in parliament, expanding the division in the region between those who want to break away from Spain and those who favor the union. Protesters in Erbil stormed the parliament building after Iraqi Kurdish leader Masoud Barzani announced he's stepping down as president of the self-ruled northern Kurdish region. Barzani said the Iraqi government used the September Kurdish independence referendum as an excuse to retake much of the territory of the Kurds. At least 27 people were killed following a weekend car bomb attack claimed by Al-Shabaab insurgents on a hotel in Mogadishu. Another car bomb went off near the former parliament building in Mogadishu, damage there being assessed. This is VOA News. Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga is demanding a new presidential election within 90 days, saying the country is in grave danger from political violence. Odinga spoke 3 days after he boycotted Thursday's rerun of the August election, where results were thrown out by the Supreme Court because of irregularities. Odinga called Thursday's vote invalid because President Uhuru Kenyatta faced no opposition. VOA reached Kenyan opposition member of parliament, Jakayo Medivo.
I think it shows that we don't have a proper electoral system. It shows that we don't have a proper electoral commission. And I think that Uhuru Kenyatta wants to rule Kenya by brute and through brute force.
Post-election violence in Kenya has left at least 8 people dead. Tensions and hatred between the two sides over land rights and politics have simmered for years. Starting next year, women in Saudi Arabia will be able to attend sporting events at 3 stadiums across the country as part of the kingdom's efforts to improve women's rights. General Sports Authority making that announcement. It's starting the preparation for the 3 stadiums to be ready to accommodate families beginning in 2018. Saudi Arabia has some of the world's tightest restrictions on women, has long barred women from sporting arenas by strict rules of segregation of the sexes in public. The head of Puerto Rico's power company, Ricardo Ramos, insists there was no illegal act that led to the cancellation of the agency's $300 million contract with a small U.S. energy company amid increased scrutiny of the deal for the company to restore Puerto Rico's power grid, which was knocked out by Hurricane Maria.
Quiero aclarar, ¿verdad? Y que quede bien, bien claro que la cancelación de este contrato.
Ramos' announcement of the cancellation came hours after Puerto Rico's governor urged the company to scrap the deal. Whitefish Energy Holdings is based in the U.S. state of Montana and in the hometown of the U.S. Interior Secretary, who denied being involved in the deal. Thousands of people took to the streets of Yangon to show support for Myanmar's military, which has received international criticism for its crackdown on Rohingya Muslims in the country. Rohingya militant attack in Myanmar police in August sparked a series of reprisals by government security forces. Since then, 600,000 Rohingya refugees from Myanmar have gone to Bangladesh. Get more news at our website, voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, October 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Three Liberian political parties demand a new elections commission and accuse President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of interference in the October 10th presidential election.
We are aware that long before the October 10, 2017 polls, President Sirleaf had invited election magistrates to her residence for a meeting. This act clearly amounted to interfering with the electoral process.
Wilma Pace, chair of the ruling Unity Party of Liberia. Meanwhile, George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change says it is preparing for the November 7 runoff election. Political tensions remain high in parts of Kenya following Thursday's controversial election rerun, and Somalia sacks its police and intelligence chiefs following Saturday's Al-Shabaab attack.
Yesterday, we have had a Council of Ministers meeting, and we have agreed there must be an accountability, and we cannot allow our people to die without protection.
Abdi Rahman Omar Osman is Somalia's information minister. South Sudan President Salva Kiir is to visit Khartoum tomorrow, Tuesday, and Africa is urged to step up measles vaccination if it is to eliminate the disease by 2020. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Three political parties in Liberia Sunday accused President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of interference in the country's October 10th presidential election. The parties are the ruling Unity Party, which presidential candidate includes incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai. The other two parties are Charles Bramskin's Liberty Party and Benoni Urie's All Liberian Party. In a statement Sunday, the parties accused President Sirleaf of having a meeting with election magistrates prior to the October 10th election, something they say amounted to interference with the electoral process. Here is Wilma Pay, chairman of the ruling Unity Party of Liberia.
We are aware that long before the October 10, 2017 polls, President Sirleaf had invited election magistrates to her residence for a meeting, which is unprecedented in election history. Our respective political parties maintain that this act clearly amounted to interference with the electoral process and has no legal basis or justification whatsoever. The president's conduct was an act of intimidation and inducement, especially since some commissioners of the National Elections Commission have warned Chairman Kokoya against election magistrates meeting President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. None of us had the slightest thought that a president who was democratically elected twice would endeavor to create this call. After 17 decades as a sovereign country, this is not what Liberia and its people deserve from a president so disprivileged.
That was Wilma Pay, chairman of the ruling Unity Party of Liberia. President Sirleaf's office was not immediately available for comment, but the Elections Commission says it will hold a news conference later today, Monday. The three political parties have also called for the appointment of a new elections commission because they say the current commission, chaired by Jerome Kokoya, is incapable of conducting a free, fair, and transparent presidential runoff election, which is scheduled for November 7th this year. The parties cited what they say were anomalies in the October 10th first round presidential election, including widespread and systematic fraud, incompetence, inefficiencies, and deliberate actions and actions by the Elections Commission, which they say prevented thousands of Liberians from voting. Here once again is Wilma Pay, national chairman of the ruling Unity Party of Liberia.
We reaffirm our stated solidarity with the Liberty Party and all other political parties and candidates that feel offended and have strong reasons to believe that the October 10, 2017 polls were characterized by massive systematic irregularities and fraud. In furtherance of this solidarity, and also considering the overwhelming evidence of fraud that continues to emerge, our respective political parties have resolved to pursue this matter to a logical legal conclusion as quickly as permissible under Liberian law. The views of Liberians, as expressed through their votes on October 10, 2017, which we now realize were not reflected in the announced results, cannot be taken for granted. The growing report of buried ballot papers being unearthed in Grand Jilet County and several locations across the country cannot be understated. The National Elections Commission, headed by Chairman Jerome Kokoya and President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, has lost its credibility and public confidence. The National Elections Commission cannot conduct any free, fair, and transparent presidential election runoff in the wake of increasing and disturbing reports of alleged massive fraud. There has to be a credible process in order for there to be a credible outcome.
That was Wilmer Pei, chairman of the ruling Unity Party of Liberia, speaking Sunday during a news conference in Monrovia. In Liberia, football legend George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, says it is making preparations for the November 7th presidential election runoff. This comes after three political parties, including the ruling Unity Party, Sunday called for the appointment of a new elections commission because they say the current commission is incapable of conducting a free, fair, and transparent runoff election. Toga McIntosh is national campaign chairman for WEAS Coalition for Democratic Change. He says there are processes put in place to handle electoral complaints.
We are in our gear. In other words, we are making sure that we'll be ready on that day, fully ready. So we do what is necessary, keeping our base alive, making some inroads in some of the areas that we didn't do too well. So, yes, we are in the ready mood. And on that particular day, we will be ready.
I'm sure you are aware of the development on Sunday. The three political parties, the ruling Unity Party, All Liberian Party of Mr. Ure, and then Liberty Party of Charles Bromskin, they are calling for a replacement of the Elections Commission.
Well, you know, they must have some reasons, but I personally do not put those reasons to that level. It's not just the only first thing they've done. They've tried various issues. So they're calling for removal is just one of those critical issues they try to grab onto. But the process tells itself. So personally, let's see how that goes. So I think we have a process. We have a democratic process. The two candidates that emerge first and second prepare themselves and go in the runoff. And I think it was not the first thing we heard. They were talking about issues that had to do with tampering. I think they must be falling short on that. So now they must have the reasons for the chairman to be relieved on his portfolio.
They mentioned anomalies in the election, what they call widespread and systematic fraud and other actions on the part of the National Elections Commission.
Look, there are rules and regulations around here. You start an election process. You go into the counting. You do not raise any issue at that. Now you see the results. And on the basis of the results, you begin to try to pick up these issues. So as far as I'm concerned, those irregularities, they have the process here. You have to go to the Election Commission, Arbitrary Board of Arbitration, rather, and let the process take its course. Go there and demonstrate what you term irregularities. And if they rise to the occasion, I'm sure those are white men and women there. And if you're not satisfied, you would go to the court. These are processes and systems. We in the coalition, we're just watching. We know some declaration has been made. November 7 is the runoff. And what we intend to do is to prepare ourselves for that day.
Ambassador McIntosh, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much, my dear brother.
Ambassador Toga McIntosh is National Campaign Chair for George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change. He was speaking with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Monday, October 30th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga is demanding a new presidential election within 90 days, saying the country is in grave danger from political violence. Odinga spoke to the Associated Press 3 days after he boycotted Thursday's rerun of the August election. Odinga called Thursday's vote invalid because President Uhuru Kenyatta faced no opposition. Meanwhile, tension remains high in a remote village in western Kenya after the body of an elderly man was discovered Sunday on a sugarcane farm. Mohamed Yusu reports for VOA from Koguta, Kenya. The death comes a day after high government officials visited the area to calm ethnic tension.
A body of an elderly man lies on the ground outside Kuguta village, surrounded by angry men armed with spears, machete, bows and arrows. They are angry about the killing. The death of the man came a day after two communities promised to end the hostilities caused by months of political uncertainty. Kuguta sits between the Kalenjin community that supports President Uhuru Kenyatta and the Luo community that is loyal to opposition leader Raila Odinga. The brother of the victim says enemies are trying to push the Luo off their ancestral land. They do not want us here. This is where I was born and my father was born here. These people came here just the other day. They have not even been here for 3 years. They are the ones who have killed my brother. The two communities have fought over land and politics for years. This latest tension and political volatility grows out of the disputed presidential vote and weekly political protests have further damaged relations between the Luo and Kalenjin community. During the October 26 election, 10% of polling stations were closed due to demonstrations that worried electoral officials. About 35% of voters participated in the rerun election, compared to an 80% turnout in August. Less than a kilometre away from the sugarcane farm where the body lies, a group of youth from the Kalenjin community, armed with machete, bows and arrows, watch. The armed youth told Viewer their neighbours have been blocking roads in political protest, making their lives difficult and making them miss their chance to vote on Thursday. A local area leader, Maureen Otiang, says the killing must stop.
We do not want any more Luo dying in the name of insecurity, in the name of voting. We have a right. If they want peace, let them give us peace. Enough is enough. We are tired.
The latest anger between the two communities reignites intercommunal fighting of 2007 and 2008 following a disputed presidential election. Then more than 1,300 people died and hundreds of thousands fled from their homes. Julius Genga is an area lawmaker.
We want to tell the security agencies it is upon them to keep law and order, and we will maintain and preach peace. But peace can only go to an extent where there is justice. We want justice to be meted on the people of Kuguta. They will not be butchered again.
Police have called on the community not to seek revenge and vowed action against people who commit violence. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Kuguta, Kenya.
The Somali government Sunday sacked its police and intelligence chiefs following Saturday's Al-Shabaab attack on a hotel in the capital Mogadishu that left at least 27 people dead. Information Minister Abdirahman Omar Osman confirmed the dismissal, saying the two security agencies should have known and prevented the attack.
First of all, our thoughts and prayers are the victims of Saturday's attack in Mogadishu, where we have lost 27 people and a number of injured people. We are still mourning, but our security force were very quick to respond, and people are now receiving treatment in hospitals in Mogadishu.
Minister, what can you tell us about the sacking, the dismissal of your intelligence chief and your police commissioner?
Yesterday, we have had a Council of Ministers meeting where we have discussed greatly about the security situation in the country. And we have agreed there must be an accountability, and we cannot allow our people to die without protection. And therefore, after the debate and discussion, we have agreed the police commissioner and the chief of intelligence of Somalia, both of them were responsible directly about the security in the area.
By sacking the chief of security, intelligence and the police, is this an admission that there's a problem in the security?
No, this is clearly shows that our leader is really accountable to the people. They have trusted in those chief of intelligence and the police commissioner to the security of the country in order to protect our people. So now is the time for security forces need to take responsibility of what happened, and we cannot allow our people to be killed by terrorists, even though we are doing a very good job in terms of stabilizing the country. But our president and our prime minister are really adamant that accountability must be number one priority, and our citizens need to be protected at all times.
Even if the Somali government had the best of security, do you think it's possible to suppress the kind of attacks that Al-Shabaab has been attacking your country?
Absolutely, there's no doubt. Somalis are resilient people. Our security forces are brave enough. They have been fighting a terrorist group for the last 10 years. They are in front lines day and night, and without getting appropriate resources and enablers for them to do their job. Furthermore, we have African forces who are assisting our Somali National Army. As you are aware, we are winning the war militarily, but terrorists have changed their tactics to assimilate warfare, where they are planting bombs in the civilian areas, and those people who want to die them, it's difficult to really contain. But what we agreed is that we need to intensify the war against terrorists. That's why our president visited the neighboring countries, so that they support the military operation in order for us to win the war against terrorists.
Abdirahman Omar Osman, Somalia's information minister, he was speaking with me from the capital, Mogadishu. South Sudan President Salva Kiir is expected to visit neighboring Sudan on Tuesday. Atain Wakatain is spokesperson for President Kiir.
The president and the accompanying delegation will be traveling to Khartoum to revitalize the agreements that were signed between Sudan and South Sudan on the 27th of September 2012. And those nine cooperation agreements have not been all implemented, so they have to be revitalized, you know, on the basis of bilateral relation between Sudan and South Sudan.
When you talk about revitalization, would this include the Abyei region?
At the moment, it might not include the Abyei because this visit came as a result of the presidential advisor on security that preceded the visit of the president to Khartoum. And when he met with the authorities in Khartoum, he requested that the next phase of the meeting should be between the two presidents, on bilateral basis. And therefore, it is now the turn for the president to travel to Khartoum and meet his counterpart, Omar al-Bashir.
Now, your government has said that the 2015 peace agreement is being implemented. First of all, will this 2015 peace agreement be discussed in Khartoum?
Sudan is already part of the IGAD, and Khartoum does not have parallel peace process. Apart from the revitalization of peace agreement that all the IGAD countries has agreed to see and to oversee.
Atain Wakatain, the spokesperson for South Sudan President Salva Kiir, was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Two international health organizations have called on Africa to step up measles vaccination efforts for the continent to achieve its goal of eliminating the disease by 2020. Sebastian Mofu has more from VOA.
The report called Progress Towards Regional Measles Elimination Worldwide 2000 to 2016, which was done by the World Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, revealed an 84% drop of measles-related deaths over the past 16 years. James Goodison, an epidemiologist at the CDC, is one of the corresponding authors of the report. He comments on the estimated 90,000 deaths from measles recorded last year, compared to more than 500,000 in year 2000.
This is quite an impressive achievement that's been made through increasing vaccination coverage around the world. And while this progress is quite impressive, the world still has a way to go. Immunization coverage rates with the first of two required doses of measles vaccine has stalled at around 85% since 2009, and this is well short of the target of 95% coverage we aim for to stop measles infections.
The report indicated that measles immunization rate was around 85% against the target of 95% to stop the infection of the highly contagious viral disease and to make the possibility of freeing the world of measles a reality. Goodison, a senior measles scientist at the CDC, fears Africa might not achieve its self-set goal of eliminating measles by year 2020.
African countries and their partners need to act urgently to raise the visibility of this goal to achieve measles elimination. Also, the Polio Eradication Initiative has supported efforts to achieve measles elimination in the region. And so once polio has been eradicated, it's important that those resources are still maintained to achieve measles elimination as well.
Sebastian Mofu for VOA News.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
A very good morning to you, James. We begin Daybreak Africa Sports with the latest Africa sports news. And I have some sport analysts with me this morning. Deji Ogembo, Ferdinand Ubum, Alfred Sariki and Akila Matawa. Let's begin with the CAF Champions League, where Al Ahly were forced to a 1-1 home draw by Wydad Casablanca. Ahead of the return leg, what do you make of the game yesterday?
Yeah, a big shot for Wydad Casablanca. Now, last time they won the trophy was way back in 1992. And they gave Al Ahly a run for their money yesterday at the Borg El Arab Stadium. We all thought it was going to be a roller coaster for the team of the century in Africa, talking about Al Ahly. But for Casablanca, it's been a really good tournament for them, and I think they want to cap it off by winning the trophy next week.
But a lot of people disagree and say that with the record of Al Ahly, they should have bring out their very best.
Going for the second leg, they will definitely have to come out, and I that will make Casablanca be on the defensive rather. So I will still probably say I will see that match ending in a draw.
All right, it's turned out to be a North African affair. Does that reflect the state of African football, that the North Africans are actually setting the pace for the other regions of Africa to, you know, follow?
Well, of course, they are taking over. Look at the CAF Champions League winners in the past. For Al Ahly, they have won 8 times. They are looking for their 9th title. At the moment, talk of Club Africain, Wydad Casablanca, all these are North African teams, and they have, you know, been at the forefront talking about African football.
All right, $2.5 million is the prize money.
Yeah, well, $2.5 million, I don't think is good enough.
All right, let's look at the biggest talking points this past weekend, and which is boxing. You have Cameroon-born French boxer Carlos Takam, who says he wants a rematch with International Boxing Federation and World Boxing Association heavyweight champion Nigerian-born British boxer Anthony Joshua. Takam was defeated in the 10th round of the World Heavyweight title fight on Saturday, but the controversy is the fact that referee stopped it. What do you guys make of it?
You know, the rules keep on changing. Takam really wanted to continue, and he really, really gave a good account of himself. But that bout, it was symbolic in several ways. Number one, the rivalry between two of Africa's greatest sporting rivalry, Cameroon and Nigeria, you know, was in it again. And for Africa, it's symbolic for the fact that that bout happened on the same day that we had the Rumble in the Jungle bout in Zaire, in Kinshasa, Zaire, between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman. That was in 1974.
What actually caught my fancy was the fact that Takam, who was unknown, came with a lot of bravery. It's the new invention to the rule now. It's a thin line. We don't know whether we should cross it or we should just stay in it.
In athletics news, Shaura Kitata Tola of Ethiopia and Kenya's Vivian Cheruiyot won the top prizes at the 36th edition of the Menova Frankfurt Marathon and IWAF Gold Label Road Race on Sunday. Shaura Kitata chopped almost 2 minutes off his personal best in difficult conditions in the men's race, clocking 2 hours, 5 minutes, 50 seconds, while Kenya's Vivian Cheruiyot, the reigning Olympic 5,000 meters champion, who is now concentrating on road racing, improved her best to 2 hours, 23 minutes, 35 seconds. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, October 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very productive week.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.